Police are always in the news. It's a simple fact. All the crime stories in the news, and there are many, by necessity involve the work of police officers and detectives. But the last couple of years have featured a steady parade of incidents like people shot by police and police shot by other people. Today we'll back up a bit and talk to police leaders about the overall approaches and strategies that guide their work, at least in our region. Community policing and other terms are up for discussion here, and we'll take much of the hour. Our guests are Ty O'Meara. He's the Ashland Police Chief here in the studio with me. Chief, good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
Good to have you here. Byron Trapp is the Lane County Sheriff. He joins us by phone from Eugene. Welcome, Sheriff.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Brian Stevens is the Eureka Police, is a captain in the Eureka Police Department. Thank you for joining us, Captain Stevens.
And good morning, Jeffrey.
Let's deal with the rough stuff first, because it's been a really tough couple of years for police and community relations, and I just wonder how this gets discussed in each of your departments. Captain Stevens, let's start with you.
Well, about 2 years ago, we had a new chief come in to our small agency. He came from San Diego, and we took an approach where we needed to really engage our community. So we have really made an effort to be out, started all kinds of different programs, like Coffee with the Captains. We go to numerous speaking events and really have tried to be the conduit for the community, and it's really paid off dividends for us.
And Sheriff Trapp in Lane County, I know you've been in the job just a year yourself, but how do you discuss what's been going on elsewhere within your department?
Well, you know, it's an ongoing conversation, and it actually, has been for, some time, depending on what the current event issues are. And I think most officers or deputies are trained in a way that provides them the resources to deal with these. Survival skills training include, situational awareness and how to be safe in your environment and know what's going on around you. And so sometimes when things are less controversial, I think we get lulled into a little bit of a comfort zone. And so these kinds of things just allow us to refresh those training skills and be mindful of them. And so those are the kind of internal conversations. Don't be overreactive, but be aware and be safe. And then at the same time, continuing to have those ongoing conversations with the community members. I just finished attending several days at our county fair, and I can't tell you the percentage of how many people came up, and so much more than in times past, saying, you know what, we have your back, we're there for you, we support you. We know, down deep, we know the community as a whole supports public safety, the rule of law, and their police officers. And I think today's environment just causes people to want to make sure we know that. And so we have to also remind each other that while there's a lot of controversy in the news, that is the minority of how people view law enforcement. There is still an overwhelming support of law enforcement in the community.
And do you see that as well yourself, Chief O'Meara and Ashland?
I do. I really believe in my heart that the vast majority of the community is behind us, and I would echo everything that the captain and the sheriff said. There are some significant problems in the relationship between law enforcement and the national community, and I believe strongly in openness and engagement. Anybody is welcome to walk in the front door of the police department, say that I want to talk to the chief, and if I have time, I'll sit down and talk to them. We've got some really good programs. Training in implicit bias, procedural justice, and dealing with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities that we're really excited about. And so I'm interested in continuing that openness and engagement with all members of the community, especially with members of the minority community.
When we talk about community policing, let's get some definitions and applications within each of your departments. It seems like each of you have had within your departments in the past anyway some mention of community policing. So let's get definitions from each of you and then how much it is a part of what your department does. Let's start with you, Chief O'Meara.
I think community policing is being involved with the community. It's knowing the community. It's not being reactive. It's being proactive. It's getting to know the kids in the community, having positive interactions with the people in the community, having positive interactions with members of the minority community. It's openness. It's engagement. It's getting ahead of problems. It's getting to the core of a problem, not addressing the symptom, but really dealing with the base issue at its foundation. And if we can address that early on, then the problem hopefully won't manifest itself at all. That's what I believe it is.
What kinds of regular contacts are there, though, that define it? What kind of, tactics then go along with the strategy?
Well, we're a little bit strapped right now. So honestly, in Ashland, we can't engage in community policing the way that I'd really like to. We are increasingly burdened with a higher call load. We want to have our men and women of the police department engage people on a deeper level, which we frankly have trouble doing with the staffing levels that we've had recently. 2015 was a really bad year for the Ashland Police staffing levels, and we were barely able to keep up with the call out. So frankly, we're not able to engage the community as much as we'd like to. So I'd like to at some point get some more people on. I know that there isn't money for it. I know absolutely that the city council is behind the police department, and if they could find the money, they'd give us more officers. If they give us four or five more officers, they got to take four or five positions away from another city department. So I'm not ignorant of that. I'm sensitive to it. If we can get more people on, I'm hoping that we can engage the community in a more meaningful way.
And so it's just a matter of money? That's why you don't have the staff you'd like to have?
Right now, it's a matter of money more than anything else.
Not attrition or anything like that?
No. We don't have a whole lot of turnover at the Ashland Police Department.
Okay. Byron Trapp in Lane County. Let's talk about what community policing is for you and how it's expressed in the Lane County Sheriff's Office.
Certainly. So, you know, I kind of have caught myself sort of smiling internally at times when the community policing became the big buzzword in the big cities across the country. And mostly just because that's what sheriff's offices, at least in rural Oregon, have done forever, is rural policing requires a community policing type of strategy where we have always had a resident deputy program where the resident deputies are usually reside in that community. They work in a community that's somewhat removed from the larger metropolitan area. They're very active at school events, very active with the business community, neighborhood watch programs. We have deputies that attend the neighborhood watch programs and interact with the community members that are actually engaged in working with their neighbors, helping patrol and doing vacation checks. And we even provide training to neighborhood watch groups about how to do traffic control to assist on minor crash scenes where there might be some traffic adjustments while the deputies are out there doing investigations. And so, like the chief said, we also have suffered substantial reductions in services over the years. And we have a much less functional and robust neighborhood watch and resident deputy program than we have had in years past. And so it's difficult in lean times with lean staff to sustain those policing efforts. And I look at community policing as really, while it's been given a label, that really is the core of quality policing of any community. And you know, it's frustrating to not have the resources to stay that in touch with the community. But by and large, if we're doing correct policing for our communities, it takes the community engagement with the officers, with the department management, so that the community tells us what they want from their police department, and we provide that to them. And so if you're out of touch, you don't know what your community is looking for. You're not sure that you're, you know, providing what they're seeking, and that's where you start having those divisions between support and frustrations come up. So there's a big part of it that demands some resource there, but I think, you know, we still, even in lean times, are able to manage a fairly functional neighborhood watch program around Lane County, and I think we're pretty fortunate.
Captain Stevens, let's talk about what community policing means to your department and how big a part it is of what you do at Eureka Police.
Yeah, so this has really been a big change for us. We are a very busy department for the size of agency we are. So our guys and gals run call to call pretty much all day long. So as we moved into this new administration, we promoted two captains, myself and Captain Watson, at the same time, November of 2014. The administration really took it among itself to be that conduit, to be that first point of contact, and begin this engagement process with the community. We did that through programs like our Coffee with the Captains, where each month we'll go out and have a location, we publicize it, and then we make ourselves available to whoever wants to come by for 2 hours for one-on-one conversations or group conversations to deal with what that community may have as an issue and try to help address it. We have a pretty robust neighborhood watch program. I believe we have 30 current neighborhoods programs going on. And the captains are responsible for going to those meetings and running those meetings. So they get to hear everything from the top, and I think that's important for our community, is that they know that the top, the administration, they truly are interested and invested in what the community has to say. They know by hearing it firsthand that we can help adjust our resources, make things better. We've taken part in a lot of local events. We love going to parades, supporting various groups by making presents with our officers. If it's nothing more, just bringing a car and having people come by and talk to them. The community has really reached out to us and said that openness, that transparency, that willing to engage really has made a difference in how we feel, how we trust our police department. That's truly what we want. We want the community to trust the police department.
So is community policing at its heart about making the public feel good about the police, or is it about reducing crime, or can you affect both essentially with one approach?
Well, I think personally you can affect both, while making them feel good, giving them the education they need to make themselves safer, make their residents safer and our community safer, we are going to reduce crime. Without giving them that training and stuff, we're just going to keep that continual wheel of this is the way it's always been. So by reaching out and giving them that education and getting them involved in their community, because truly to reduce crime, and as we move forward in the way society is, we need community engagement. They have to help us police their own communities. So we're trying to work toward that goal.
We're talking about policing and the community with a couple of leaders from community from departments around the region. Brian Stevens is a captain with the Eureka Police. Byron Trapp is the Lane County Sheriff. Ty O'Mara is the Ashland Police Chief. You can join the discussion on the exchange. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. How much does the change in technology affect what you're capable of doing and what the relations with the community are? I mean, we have all kinds of smartphone apps, but also everybody's got a camera around them right now. Byron Trapp, how has that affected the work at the Lane County Sheriff's Office, for example?
Well, we haven't had the resources to buy into the latest trends of technology in the camera world. Our jail is the exception. We have a jail that has a capacity for about 500 inmates, and we're less than that with the resources we have available. But we have been able to, mostly through grant funding, and other resources similar to that, is provide a camera coverage of the jail that there's virtually no place in the jail outside of an individual cell that is not covered with some kind of video surveillance. So we've done great in that area. But in the patrol side, we have evaluated camera systems, and it really is just a cost prohibitor at this point for us to engage in a body camera. We've had the in-car dash cameras in years past, and we were financially unable to sustain that program. So, the perspective I think that staff has is they're accepting of that technology. It's just a challenge for us to obtain it because of the finances. But then, I think the overall view of law enforcement is that we recognize that cameras are everywhere, and whether we are running the camera or controlling the camera ourselves or otherwise, I think officers recognize that and have behaved accordingly for years. I don't think that the current trend of body cameras is new and different as far as law enforcement recognizing suddenly that they're on camera. I think that the camera technology's been out for many, many years, and dash cams actually is old technology now. So I think there's some ways we can enhance the technology that are a little bit, provide some insights and benefits we haven't had with the body cams. But, I don't see it changing substantially what we do day in and day out.
Chief Ty O'Mara, what do you have in the way of cameras or intentions to get them in Ashland?
We have body cameras deployed on all of our officers, and I appreciate the sheriff's comments about how expensive it is, because it is expensive. We were fortunate to go into a partnership with the Medford Police Department and Jackson County Sheriff's Office, and we all collaborated, decided on the same product, decided on the same storage platform, and decided on the same policy. So if you're in Jackson County, Medford, or Ashland, you can expect the same policy as far as body cameras go. Having said that, Ashland PD has been the pilot program, and to my knowledge, Medford and the county haven't deployed theirs yet. We're still working out the kinks with the Ashland program. I think body cams are great. They give us the ability to immediately substantiate or refute a complaint that somebody makes. I think technology in general has been a great tool for law enforcement and for the community. And I will take any scrutiny that anybody wants to give the Ashland Police Department. If people want to videotape us, record us on the phone, that's fine. Do it all day long. If the officer's doing something wrong, then I want to know about it. At the same time, that technology can be used very irresponsibly. And I will use as an example the most recent viral video that was posted on Facebook and YouTube involving an arrest of a man on the plaza a couple of months ago. That was unfairly inflammatory. Somebody took a very short video of a very long incident, posted it, and everybody's in an uproar over it. And I still ask people to watch that judiciously and understand that there is a lot more video out there that we cannot release legally. And after the rest of the video is released, I think it will show the entire incident in a different light. So I invite the scrutiny. I invite the accountability. One story I'll tell is that I was approached with a laundry list of complaints about one of our officers. Like all of our officers, this guy wears a body camera. He's very good about turning it on, which is required by state law. And the person that was complaining, who is very good-natured and loving and has good intentions in her heart, she said, I've got this long list of complaints. Said, that's fine. Just tell me what the date and time is, and we'll look at it. And I'm open to the possibility that the officer did something wrong. If you'll be open to the possibility that the other person, the suspect, was the one who inflamed the situation. And she didn't want to share that with me. And I think that that's unfair to the police department to level a list of complaints and not give me the information that I need to either refute or substantiate that complaint. So I think that they're great tools. They're going to hold us accountable if we're doing something wrong, and they're going to paint the right picture if we were doing something right.
The video you referred to, it is a long video, and you know, you can hear the little chunk that we had pulled. You can hear the officer saying, stop resisting. You can hear the man saying, I'm not resisting, I'm autistic. He's shouting out a bunch of things. This could, you know, we could have run the whole thing for many minutes. It happened back in May, is that right?
Yeah, it happened in May. Nobody ever complained about it. Mm-hmm. I and the other command officers reviewed the video after the fact because we review all use of force incidents, saw nothing wrong with it. I actually then and still praise the officers for doing a really professional job, for being calm and professional in the face of great antagonism. Nobody said anything about it. I didn't think anything about it. Nobody complained. Nobody said, hey, Ty, I think that this is an issue. And then somebody posted just a sliver of the incident on Facebook, and it blew up. And I think that that's unfair to the police department. The vilification that the officers have received, not just them, but their families. We have had spouses that have backed away from Facebook because of how these specific officers have been dragged through the mud. The people from across the country, people that are not even part of our community, throwing really, really nasty, vile comments at the men and women of the Ashland Police Department. It's grossly unfair to the people that serve the community every day.
Let's talk about the body cameras in Eureka as well. Brian Stevens, the captain of the Eureka Police, you've picked up body cameras there too, haven't you?
Yes, sir. We in April this year, we implemented our body camera program after a very long testing process, and we wanted to make sure we got everything right. We vetted our policy through all outlets, including the district attorney's office, city attorney, our own officers, our union, and then our chief's advisory panel. So we feel we've did our due diligence to set a program that will be positive for not only the officers but for our community. And the feedback we've gotten so far has been nothing but positive. I concur with the sheriff in that I think body cameras are great. I think they're going to save, as far as an administration, a lot of time when it comes to internal investigations, because there are a lot of complaints that we get that now we can watch the video and then go back and just straight up talk to the people that made the complaints and say, it's all on video. More than welcome to show you, but you know, if you really want to follow through with this, you know, we have the evidence to show the officers did nothing wrong. As far as technology as a whole goes, I agree with the sheriff too that I think this is causing a lot of the issues in our communities and our society, with Facebook, with all the media outlets are 24/7, and with blogs, there is no control over what they put out there, and they only show what they want to show to get hits, to get viewers to their channels or to their blog sites. And again, it's not given the true representation, and officers and deputies alike are being, you know, pretty much convicted by the public before they ever get their day in court or get a chance to actually say what really happened. You know, California, we have strict laws and provisions on we can't share parts of internal investigations, we can't talk about it, we can't talk about discipline. And so we don't have a chance to refute any of those claims that are being made to in the open public. We can't go on and post videos if it's still involved in the investigation. So It's been a real challenge, and I think that's what's caused a lot of the insight in a lot of our communities, where there's uproar over a video that is posted, and you know, when it finally the investigation is done and our criminal case is done, we find out that that was a very small portion of the video. It did not truly represent the case as a whole. And now, you know, how do you go back and mend those fences? I mean, community members don't always come forward and want to apologize for the way they acted out based on what they've seen. So I think a lot of this is causing communities to overreact. They act too quickly before justice is ever given a chance to work its way through the system.
There was a video incident with Eureka Police, where I guess the North Coast Journal had requested some video, which the department resisted delivering on the grounds of personnel stuff. Now, the court ruled that that does have to be delivered. Is the city going to appeal that to the police department?
First of all, it was the city that was actually fighting to have the video released. As far as the department goes, we really didn't have a say in that. The Court of Appeals has ruled that the video should be released, and I know that is going to closed session next week for the city attorney and city council, so I expect it will be released. I don't see anything else that's going to hold it up, and I really feel that it should be released personally. I have no qualms with it being out there. We can answer for anything that's in there. But again, that's changing. You know, our chief is meeting this morning with other heads of departments in the county, and they're trying to work through a policy right now to deal with the release of body cam video. You know, San Diego's got a very good policy, I think, where the district attorney will release videos after a case has been submitted to them and they've decided not to file in cases such as an officer-involved shooting. So they'll show the video, but they have certain parameters by which they show it up to a certain point to where, you know, the actual shots are being fired and they don't go past there. I think that's going to benefit us. I see the writing on the wall. I think the disclosure of body camera videos or videos investigations is going to become as transparent as can be with the court's ruling that they're all probably going to end up being released someday. So we're trying to stay ahead of that curve a little bit so that we don't have to do a total disclosure of every video, because that would just pretty much shut down most body camera systems, especially for small departments, because we don't have the manpower and the resources to redact and do the things we need to do.
We ended up in a discussion of technology, but the larger issue here is policing and community policing in particular. As we talked to Brian Stevens at the Eureka Police, he's a captain there. We also have Ty O'Mara, the Ashland Police Chief, in the studio with us, and Byron Trapp, the Lane County Sheriff, on the phone. We'll resume the discussion when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to call in as well. Phone calls and emails, and our police officers back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about the policing in general and community policing more specifically, when and where it is possible and what it means for that matter. We have three guests with us. Ty O'Meara is the Ashland Police Chief. He's in the studio with me. Byron Trapp is the Lane County Sheriff. He joins us by phone. And Brian Stevens is a captain with the Eureka Police. He joins us by phone as well. And you can do the same. You can get into this conversation about the kinds of things you'd like to see from police in your community and what some of the issues and obstacles are from the perspective of people on the police forces. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Again, I don't want to get totally caught up in the technology discussion, but in the issue that you were talking about, Chief O'Meara, with the video that got posted online, could you have released the body cam video and said, look, this is our version of it? Or do you not want to get in that kind of an escalation of like video versus video?
It's not a matter of whether or not I want to get into the escalation. It's under Oregon law that is evidence in a crime, and that evidence belongs exclusively to the district attorney. And I spoke with the district attorney about this, and she didn't see any reason to vary from the norm, which is all evidence gets withheld until the suspect, the defendant, has had his day in court, and then after the case is adjudicated, it becomes releasable under Oregon records law. So it's not a decision that I have to make. It's just not releasable because it's evidence in a crime.
Let's talk about using some of the social media and the other stuff that is out there right now. Byron Trapp at the Lane County Sheriff's Office, is our Facebook page? Do you do tweets? I mean, what kinds of things do you do to try to use what's available to you for relatively cheap to be able to connect to the community?
Yeah, we do both of that. We have a Facebook page that we try to keep active with local events, and our PIO puts all of our news releases that we send out to the media. She posts those on Facebook. A little bit of use of Twitter. I don't. I have an account. I haven't looked at it in years since I created it, so I'm not fluent in the Twitter world. But Facebook, certainly. And we have a pretty good following locally, and try to take advantage of all of the media available to us, and certainly social media is a big part of that. Although, as far as the population of Lane County, I think we're 350-some thousand. We have I don't know what our exact following is, but it's in the tens of thousands. So we're not reaching a majority of our community through social media by any means, and that still falls to our relationship with our local media, TV, and newspapers to really reach the community.
We have a few questions here from listeners. Adam and Eugene writes, I have heard that officers from rough areas like L.A. and Oakland get rotated into more quiet rural zones. Not that I was aware of those happening in L.A. and Oakland, but does this happen? Does it give shell-shocked officers a chance to refocus? Does it release bad apples into otherwise placid communities? I don't know who might be in a position to answer this. Captain Stevens, does it sound like anything you've heard of?
I don't know that they get rotated out. We obviously have had people and officers from Oakland and other Bay Area cities come here for a change of pace. But they're not, I've never seen like bad apples. They're not running from anything. City life, city work can be, I think, hard and taxing on some people. And I think a lot of times right out of the academy, it's not about really where you want to work. Sometimes it's about having that job to pay the bills. So I think a lot of guys get their feet wet at an agency. And a lot of times it's a big agency because they hire pretty prevalently at one time, and then they look for where they actually want to go and set their roots and raise their families. So I see that more as how we come in contact with officers from big cities.
All right, I have an email here from Emmy in Ashland. She asks, community policing implies an oversight board composed of citizens who interpret incidents or complaints involving officers. Do any of these departments have such a board who oversees their activities? Ashland did have one. Does it still, Chief O'Meara?
We don't have a board. We answer to the city council, and there are some contractual issues between the city and the union that speak to this, so we don't have one. I'm open to any scrutiny that anybody wants to give us. I had this exact conversation with some folks from OSF just last week, and I'm looking at posting some additional statistics online. I need to figure my way through that, but I want to be as open as I possibly can, but we don't have an oversight board right now except for the city council.
OSF being the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which has released some concerns recently about the treatment of minorities in Ashland. You mentioned minorities as well, and I haven't followed up on that. What are some of the things that you're faced with and that you're trying to get a handle on here?
The members of our minority community, the people of color here, are very rightfully, correctly sensitive to the disparity between how people of color and white people are treated in the community. This is something that I've been getting more and more involved in with implicit bias. And the fact is, people of color are seen in a diminished capacity in the United States. This is not something that we can ignore. It's something that we have to be aware of. It's something that we have to work through. It doesn't do us any good to ignore it. So a lot of the people of color at OSF, they bring trauma along with them when they have contact with the police officers, and we need to be respectful of this. I am trying to work with some members of the OSF company to figure out a way to have that trauma mitigated or not triggered, because the fact is police officers are going to have contact with people of color sometimes. People of color will speed. They'll make mistakes like everybody else does, or maybe there's just some reason that we're going to have contact with a person of color. So what can we do to mitigate the trauma that gets triggered when we have that necessary contact? I don't have the answer to that. I'd love to work on it with the community.
How time intensive could meetings with the community get? And for that matter, when you're talking about, and as this refers to question two that we got from Jesse in Eagle Point about things like walking beats and things where you get people actually in the community on a regular basis, is this something that is just not feasible because of the time constraints you have?
We have two officers now assigned full-time to walking beats downtown. They're called our Central Area Patrol Officers. Historically, Ashland has had one, but because of the behavioral issues downtown the last couple of years, we have two as of a week or two ago. That's the only foot beat that we can really afford, so to speak, right now. The officers are overworked in the rest of the community, and we can't take them out of their cars in a meaningful way. So going back to what I said before, if I had more staffing, I'd love to engage the community in a more meaningful way. Right now, it's just not possible except for the downtown officers.
Well, it raises the question about technology. I mean, could you, if you got rid of the body cameras, could you afford another officer?
No.
Is it that?
No. The body cameras were purchased with asset forfeiture money through our partnership in the Medford Area Drug and Gang Enforcement Task Force. They cost about $15,000 for the hardware. The storage costs another $15,000 a year. For me to bring on one entry-level officer would cost me about $77,000.
Okay, back to the idea of walking beats. Brian Stevens at Eureka Police, you have a pretty walkable downtown, old town in Eureka. Are there people on foot there?
Yes, we have a full-time old town officer, works Wednesday through Saturday. Then we have also overtime through a Measure Z fund that was funded by the county that we try to supplement the days that he's off. And we're also looking at a program where when we redid our system and did our city as far as responsibilities for the captains, we created two service areas. And the local media outlets then asked the community, you know, what do you see as your neighborhoods? And we were able to create about 12 neighborhoods in our city. So our plan is to move forward with assigning actual officers to those neighborhoods. So maybe each neighborhood will get two officers. And that doesn't mean that they'll necessarily work just that neighborhood, because some of these neighborhoods are pretty small. But it would be a direct point of contact or a conduit for the community to have a point of contact so they can reach out to those officers, relay information. That could help me get the resources they need. It will make a better relationship between those small communities and those officers. And then those officers will have a better feel of what kind of crime is taking place there. And then we're going to leave it up to them to start their crime prevention techniques and efforts, and then give us ideas on how we can assist them to make it happen. So we're looking at expanding that. We try to get the officers out of the car as much as possible. Our day watch, our population almost triples in the city. And we only run four officers, so it's pretty tough during the day. But we're looking to try to make a way to get the little neighborhoods more involved with the actual officers so they can get to know each other.
Sheriff Trapp, is it even worth asking the question if you could ever put people on feet in places far-flung as Lane County?
Well, yeah, it's not too practical for us. Our county is substantial in geographic size. We're 4,600 square miles. We run from the beach in the Florence area to the Cascade Summit at the ski resorts, and you know, nearly 100 miles wide and 50 miles north-south. And we have a minimum staffing on duty at any given time in the county of three deputy sheriffs to cover that zone. We serve 108,000 residents directly for their law enforcement emergency response. And so for us, it's our guys will put well over 200, 250 miles a day on their police car on any given shift. So it'll be a little difficult to do on bicycle or on foot. We do, though, have a couple of city contracts where we provide the law enforcement service for the cities of Vinita and Crestwell. And the deputies over the years have initiated bicycle patrols in those smaller towns where they have the ability to get out of their car and do some more street-level interaction with the community. But then that does demand an additional resource from the county general patrols for backup response should they engage in something, and they're a little bit isolated in those communities when they're the only deputy working, and then the remaining county patrols are scattered anywhere from 100 miles away to down the block. So it's a challenge. Without looking at the foot beats or the bicycle beats in the county overall, it's a challenge just to get there by vehicle with any timeliness.
There was a discussion certainly last year about creating a community policing district in part of Lane County. What has become of that idea for the Fern Ridge District?
It's still I think has some life in it. It's not completely dead. The community group that was initiating that has sort of regrouped. They're kind of looking at what their options are and how to reinvigorate it, tighten it up a little bit, and make it more appealing to the community. So I think there was a little bit of a rush to get it to the ballot, and so they didn't have the time to develop it as fully as maybe it could have been. They certainly didn't have the amount of time necessary to educate the community members on it. So when it did come forward for the board's consideration to put it to a ballot, the community was lacking a lot of information, and they were certainly concerned and misinformed to a level that sort of caused it to fall at the time. So it'll be good to see them put it back forward with maybe some new focus and see if we can actually make it functional and workable and put some more resources out in that part of the county.
I have a question here. It's a phone call. I'm not going to take the call itself. I'll see if I could just paraphrase what the general issue is here, because the person's name is, they chose to use the name Mud, which I'm going to assume is they don't want to be identified. And it's directed to the Ashland Police. It says, Chief O'Meara, you should be a social worker, not police. Disgusted with the department, transients break every ordinance every day. Is dealing with the transient population in downtown Ashland one of the major issues you have to deal with on a regular basis?
It is. That's been one of the hot topics that that we've been prioritizing recently. I don't really understand the question if the person's saying we don't enforce enough or we're enforcing too much. But it's interesting that if we I got two Facebook messages about 2 weeks ago. One of them said, why aren't you doing something about the transients on the plaza? And the other one said, you're messing with the transients on the plaza too much. So this is the tightrope that we have to walk. We want to be respectful of everybody's rights. We want to enforce the ordinances equitably. But yes, transient behavioral issues and issues downtown in general has been one of our highest priorities the last year.
Captain Stevens, one of the same situations, I would think, in downtown Eureka, perhaps.
Yeah, our transient homeless issue has been pretty much time-consuming for us for the last year. We had a large transient encampment of about 180 people behind our mall along our waterfront. And over the past 6 months or so, we moved to shrink that footprint to as small as possible and then finally moved out with a full eviction of those people from that area. While it did, you know, cause some concern with a certain population that we have here in town, the majority of the community was very supportive as taking back our waterfront and stopping all the environmental damage. But now we have some displacement. We have issues in other parts of the city that we have to deal with. So, again, our problem-oriented policing team, our mobile intervention services team that works with Department of Health and Human Services, and pretty much our patrol guys, 15, 20 calls a day for municipal violations associated with transient-related issues, camping, drinking in public, loitering, blocking sidewalks, those kind of things. So it's an ongoing issue for us. I've been here 18 years. It's been since day one, and there's no real good solution yet that's come forward to help ease this issue.
Is it the kind of thing where this is best not done as a police issue? I mean, we're talking, there's some crossover here, too, with mental health issues in police departments where it seems like society is reaching the conclusion that maybe police are not the people who should be responding to such incidents. And so, I mean, how equipped are you to deal with transient populations, particularly if there are, at the same time, mental health issues? I by no means imply that everybody who's on the move is also mentally ill. But, I mean, you've got some issues to deal with that are not necessarily right in the slot of what policing is about. Would that be a fair characterization, Chief O'Meara?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said this to the council before. This has come up quite often as we've discussed this. The transient issue in Ashland is only in a minority sense is it a law enforcement issue. There are economic refugees. There are domestic violence refugees. There are mentally ill people within that community. There are members of the LGBTQ community that are fleeing intolerant homes. And the vast majority of them, this is important, the vast majority of them aren't doing anything wrong. They just want to enjoy Ashland like everybody else wants to enjoy Ashland. So the law enforcement response to this is a minority response to it. This is the first time that I know of.
When you say minority response, I want to be clear what you mean there.
I mean only a minority part of this issue.
Okay.
Is less than half of this issue is a law enforcement issue. There are mental health issues. There are general homeless issues. There are more homeless people in the United States. There are some people who are using the home free movement as a counterculture expression of their beliefs. So this is not majoritively a police matter. This is the first year that we've taken a more holistic, comprehensive approach. The Ashland Culture of Peace Commission that I'm a member of has deployed peace ambassadors to downtown. We have a new partnership with Jackson County Mental Health where they have a full-time crisis mental health worker embedded with the Ashland Police Department as of a couple of weeks ago. We do have the new ordinances to address specific behavioral issues. And whatever this combination is, I want to throw out the new CAP officer and the extra cadets, this combination right now, knock on wood, seems to be working. The downtown behavior issues seem to be mitigated somewhat, but it is not a majority police issue.
For any of you, all of you, how do you get to this moment in history where there's enough incidents that there is distrust of police in the community certainly wariness of community by police. How do you get to a place where you still make the moves to do community policing without having the community withdraw from you and having your people want to withdraw from the community? Sheriff Trapp, let's start with you.
Well, I think we're still in a, in this community, we're still in a good spot. I mean, I don't think we're seeing those divisions between, it's not an us versus them environment, certainly in Lane County, I think broader Oregon. I think, like we spoke earlier in the program, there's still substantial support from our community, and our community members are willing to, on social media and in person. Just this week, we got another box of cookies and thank you cards from school kids and I think a church program that put together. And so I walked through the briefing room, and there's always some kinds of goodies in there that the community is constantly reaching out and reminding their law enforcement that they are supportive. So I think we're in a good spot, and we'll continue to do what we can to ensure that we maintain that relationship with our community. I think most importantly is that we need the assistance nationwide of our leaders in our communities, national and state and local leaders, and the media. And we need to get back to recognizing that it is impossible to pass judgment on any event until everything is factually known. And none of us will know the facts to be able to speak in a manner that has any meaningful impact to the conversation without knowing those facts. And we can't get there until the investigations of these events have occurred and the true assessment of right or wrong by law enforcement, whether it's lawful or unlawful by law enforcement, whether it was moral or immoral by law enforcement, all these judgments need to be reserved until these cases can be looked at. And I think if we look at many of these national events that have caused significant outcry from communities, once a few weeks have passed and the full facts have been identified, they aren't as horrific as the media has initially presented, how some of our national and state leaders have initially made them sound to be. And unfortunately, that's what makes the news. And weeks later, when the reality of the incident is truly known at a factual level and people could really understand it and make a more accurate opinion, that isn't news anymore because that story is so long ago. So I don't know how we get there as a nation and as state level, broader over community leaders and at the local level for sure. We need to be able to have some self-control and not condemn each other in the media or at the podium at a press conference until we actually can speak with an educated level about what's in front of us. And to have those conversations just in a speculative tone, to assume that somebody did something wrong when I don't know the facts, is arrogant and it's hurtful. And I think that's what's a big part of damaging our relationships with our communities nationwide. And that's where we need to get a hold of and get that fixed.
Captain Stevens, your answer for how we keep enthusiasm for engagement on both sides.
I think we just need to make sure that our officers are just unwavered in their efforts. We can't allow what's going on nationally to affect us locally in the sense that we become recluse. We stop doing what the good we worked so hard for. We call it putting money in the bank. We constantly are trying to keep those lines of communications open, reach out to those different groups, attend those events so that in the event we do have an issue where there's a use of force that takes place in Eureka and it may be controversial, we can use some of that money in the bank to keep the calm and allow us to get to the end of the investigation and hopefully have built the trust with our community that we will police ourselves, we will report what is true, and if we were wrong, then we'll take care of that also. And I agree with the nationally, the state of the way things are being presented, the lack of support a lot of times for law enforcement, siding with whatever your somewhat your biases are. And and not being open and not being honest about what truly happened, or, like the sheriff said, allowing the investigation to take its full course before making or passing judgment.
Ty O'Meara, Ashland Police Chief, last 30 seconds of yours if you want.
Thank you. I would echo what the sheriff and the captain said. They said it really well. You know, police officers mess up sometimes. Departments mess up sometimes. I think the vast majority of the time we get stuff right. But we are going to mess up every now and then. And give us a fair shot at looking at the situation, hold off judgment until all the facts are known. And if we did something wrong, then we'll change it. That's fine. But it's just not fair to rush to judgment. So openness, engagement with the community, that's what I continue to look forward to.
Okay, we had a wide-ranging discussion today that started with community policing and went pretty wide from there. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Ty O'Meara is the Ashland Police Chief, Byron Trapp, the Lane County Sheriff, and Brian Stevens, a captain at Eureka Police. Gentlemen, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy.